Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotin in Washington, D.C.
What is happening in this country is very regrettable. The events surrounding the Director General of Anti-Corruption Bureau is one such event. There have been so many events in the past that people have been arrested for no cause at all.
Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera calls on all citizens to join the fight against corruption, but the opposition says he should resign.
So, obviously, they're going to put in other people to make it look like they're not targeting the family. But you see, even if you feel that that is not targeting the family because there are other people who are involved, and I should say to you, quite a lot, actually.
A report by the Botswana Presidential Commission of Inquiry proposes changing Serete Kama Day to Heroes Day.
I want Ghanaians who are watching or listening to know that if all these three pillars will work, the first thing as a nation we need is to change the mindset of every individual in the country.
And Ken Ajepon, a popular Ghanaian parliamentarian and a prominent businessman, seeks to become the presidential candidate for the governing New Patriotic Party, or NPP. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera is calling on all citizens to join the fight against corruption. This, the president says, will help make the country a better place for economic growth and prosperity. His call came during an address on the commemoration of International Anti-Corruption Day on Friday. But the main opposition Democratic People's Party, or DPP, is calling on the president and his entire government to resign. The party says Chakwera has yet to demonstrate a commitment to the fight against graft. The opposition party says the recent arrest of Martha Chizuma, the head of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, was an attempt to undermine the fight against corruption. But supporters of the government reject the opposition's demand. They commend the president for establishing a committee to investigate the circumstances that led to the arrest, saying it demonstrates true leadership. Shadrick Namalomba is a parliamentarian from the opposition DPP. He tells me that Malawians are displeased with recent developments, including the arrest of the head of the anti-graft agency.
What is happening in this country is very regrettable. The events surrounding the Director General of Anti-Corruption Bureau is one such event. There have been so many events in the past that people have been arrested for no cause at all. And also, when you look at how the arrest was effected, you know, it just reminds us of those dark days of one party rule. You know, in those days, people could be arrested, could be beaten, could be imprisoned without any charge. And in this case, one wonders how a whole government, and because this is what also I've said, that they were not aware that the Director General of Anti-Corruption Bureau was about to be arrested. The whole government machinery was not aware. And that's a mockery.
Shadrick, tell me, why does the DPP want the government, the current government, led by President Lazarus Chakwera, to resign? Why?
Should people continue suffering? Should the Malawians continue suffering at their hands? No. Right now, the economy is not performing. Right now, there is hunger in the country. Right now, you see people looting billions of Malawi kwachas. There is fraud everywhere. There is looting everywhere. Recently, we were welcomed by news that the government has paid through a bogus company to buy fertilizer, $750 million.
Shadrick, is this the best alternative the DPP can show to the people of Malawi, that constantly if there are news reports that are not favorable to the government, then the DPP calls for the resignation of the entire government. What is the DPP's alternative to good governance?
Under the circumstances, because they have muzzled the opposition, as the opposition, we are supposed to provide checks and balances, but they have muzzled the opposition. Under the circumstances, the best that they can do is to resign. Mind you, in our constitution, we do not have a provision where, and we know that we don't have a provision where you can report the president, because we use the presidential kind of election. Now, the best they can do to save Malawians is to resign. In the alternative, the other option is for Parliament to pass an impeachment motion and impeach the president. But we have to go all the way through impeachment? No. The other alternative is to wait for 2025. And Malawi has already, we are Democratic Progressive Party. We stand for the people, you know, for people. We stand and we advocate people's rights and the civil liberties of people. Should we wait until, and this is the question, should Malawians wait until 2025 when we have another general election?
Shadrick, your government was in power. You faced similar challenges you could not handle. And that is why you were kicked out by Malawians to allow this president to come in. You were allowed. Malawians allowed you to serve your term to election. Why don't you give this present government the time to also correct some of the mistakes you made in order for their policies to work? Because they clearly stated that the mismanagement that occurred under your administration a few years ago, 2 years ago, have to be corrected before their policies that are implementing will take root and bear fruit. Why don't you allow them that? Isn't this what democracy is about?
Peter, you mentioned of mismanagement under DPP. Which mismanagement? Because at that particular time, the economy was performing. We had a stable exchange rate in this country. We had the foreign reserves over 6 months. People could import goods, essential goods, medicine, fertilizer in this country. Right now, all that is gone. So when you're saying there was mismanagement, what kind of mismanagement? The mismanagement that we should be talking about now is the mismanagement under the Tonse government, under Chakwera government. And it is that mismanagement that the people of Malawi cannot live with. I'm telling you, people of Malawi cannot live with. Now, if we are going, and this is unfortunate of democracy, it is indeed true that we must wait for 5 years. And 5 years we are going to wait.
Shadrick Namalomba is a parliamentarian from the Malawian opposition DPP. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. In Botswana, a report by the Presidential Commission of Inquiry has proposed changing Sir Seretse Khama Day to Heroes Day. This, the report suggests, will honor all individuals who contributed to the country's independence. The proposal follows a nationwide consultation by the Commission of Inquiry. Sir Seretse Khama Day was established by Botswana's second president, Ketumile Joni Masiri, to honor the founding leader and first president who led the country to independence. Other recommendations include that a former president who has served 2 full-year terms must not return to active politics. Reacting to the commission's proposals in part one of a conversation with VOA, former President Seretse Khama Ian Khama told me that the proposals appear to be targeting members of his family and are eroding the legacy of his father, who is the country's founding president and first president. Khama and several former government officials have been charged with multiple criminal offenses in Botswana, including illegally possessing firearms. Khama denies the charges and says they are politically motivated. Here is the concluding part of the 2-part conversation with former President Khama.
So obviously they're going to put in other people to make it look like they're not targeting the family. But you see, even if you feel that that is not targeting the family because there are other people who are involved, and I should say to you quite a lot, actually, there are quite a lot of people in this country who have married non-Botswana, quite a lot. So the issue I'm trying to point out to you is that, but why do it anyway? Even if you remove the element of our family, just take them out of the equation. Why would you introduce something which has embraced other people before, and now you want to exclude them. That's why I say that is not progressive. That is taking us backwards. As we go forward in society today, we should be all embracing. If we take the example of the United Kingdom, that they now have a prime minister of Asian background. That is the kind of societies that we are living in today. So you don't exclude people. In Britain, we don't want to see in future constitution which says that, no, people like him should not be able to be the prime minister because he's not originally English. What is that? Where are you taking a country when you do that? We're all the same people. And if we've chosen to live in Botswana and we've got parents, whether it's one or two parents who are from that country, and we have devoted ourselves to work, and we have already worked and been president of the country, now you bring in a constitution which says if you were to stand again, you would be excluded because one of your parents was not a Botswana, but previously you were allowed to stand.
Well, Mr. President, one of the recommendations is that former presidents who are being paid as they retire from office should not be allowed back into active politics. Former presidents should also be barred from seeking to come back to office because the Constitution does not specifically say that former president who have served two consecutive terms in office cannot come back to office or seek political office again. What is your take about these recommendations?
Now, when it comes to seeking another term, currently you can do a maximum of 2 terms. Then you break off. And if you want to come back and stand again, you have that opportunity. So again, his fear, his biggest fear, is that I would come and stand again. And if I stood against him, he knows he would lose. So that's why this whole constitutional review is targeted. Because otherwise, up to now, what has been the problem? What has been the issue? We've had other former presidents. Why suddenly now are we saying that, no, you must not be able to stand again? If that is, say, you stand and people don't want you, they won't vote for you. Then you're not coming back. If they do, they will vote for you again. So we are supposed to be a democracy which has now been completely eroded by him. Let the people decide and not him trying to force a situation because it suits him, because he fears the support that I have if I had decided to stand again.
So overall, with these recommendations, how do you think things can move forward in terms of constitutional amendment to make the lives of the people better as a former president?
People's lives are not going to be made better with these type of constitutional amendments which take us back to the Iron Age. What makes people's lives better are programs and policies designed to improve the standard of living and the welfare of its citizens, something which he has not done. So this is just part of his vendetta. All the kind of things that have been going on in this country in the last 4 years that he has been in office has just been targeting opponents. Anybody who opposes him is to erode democracy, to put himself up there on a pedestal that he is the one and only. And that doesn't bring anything. If you look at various reports, even from the United Nations, you will see that the standard of living of our people has gone down. You will see this other report which talks about happiness of the nation. We are right down there, rock bottom. Corruption has increased under him, with him being corrupt himself. And going and suspending the head of the corruption agency who was investigating him and other people who are close to him in this regime's administration. So you can ask, don't ask me, ask other people what they think about their quality of life under him. So the one thing to do is to make sure that you deal with bread and butter issues, because people are not going to be able to eat an amended constitution to fill their stomachs and have a better way of life.
Serete Kama Ian Kama is a former Botswana president. He spoke with me from an undisclosed location. Ken Ajepon is a popular Ghanaian parliamentarian and a prominent businessman who is seeking to become the presidential candidate for the governing New Patriotic Party, or NPP. The lawmaker, who is visiting the U.S., was invited to be the keynote speaker at a ceremony held in Arlington, Virginia, by members of the NPP in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. With multiple businesses which employ over 7,000 Ghanaians, Ajepon says he will only need 4 years as president to transform the mindset of the people and create millions of jobs for citizens. I caught up with Ken Ajepon via Skype and began by asking him about his vision and plans if Ghanaians decide to choose him as the next president.
Well, my vision, I'll simply put, is in three pillars. That is patriotism, honesty, and discipline.
What do they mean?
Yeah, before I go on to explain what I mean by the three pillars, is that I want Ghanaians who are watching or listening to know that if all these three pillars work, the first thing as a nation we need is to change the mindset of every individual in the country. The problem we have is not only politicians, and it's not only the citizens, all of us, to make a difference in society, we need to change our mindset. And to do so, we first have to be patriotic. That's the P. Patriotic in the sense that we should love our nation. And first of all, if you love your country, you will not steal from your country. If you love your country, you work hard to increase productivity.
You campaign for the current administration. Ghanaians are saying things are difficult and promises made have not been kept. Their words, not mine. What is going to be different in your administration, and how do you convince them that you promised them something, it didn't happen, it's going to happen in your time? How do you convince them to do so?
Thank you very much. That's a very good question. First of all, it's good I'm communicating with you, or I'm sharing these ideas with you. We have to first to admit that the problems Ghanaians are encountering in our country is not unique. It is everywhere in the world. Just that probably I have to admit, not probably, I have to admit that ours is more serious compared to others. So what I want us to do, my policy will be that you have to work before you end. The charity work is too much. And Ghanaians are solely dependent on government for everything. Here, it's not like that. I keep telling them that, look, anybody who depends solely on government for his existence will never be successful. He'll be poor. We all have to work. You work, you earn it, you appreciate it because you sweat, you work hard before you got that, and therefore you manage it properly.
Now, let's talk about people that you plan to work with, because sometimes Ghanaians call for government reshuffle or ministers to be reshuffled. What yardstick are you going to use to select your people, and two, how are you going to keep them motivated to work for or to ensure that your promises are kept?
First of all, we jumped. The P, we have the H, then D. Your question goes to the D, discipline. Discipline. I have said it before that if I'm elected as president of the country, I'll start work by 6 o'clock. So let's take it, for instance, I'm visiting a ministry, which I'll do. I'll not inform you. I'll come to your office. If I get there 8 o'clock, you are not there. Stay where you are. Don't come back.
You are fired.
You are fired. Don't come back. We have to instill discipline in the leaders themselves so that the workers will emulate the leaders. If a minister gets fired, the director will sit up. If the director, chief director gets fired, the director will sit up. If the director gets fired, the accountant, So it will trickle down. So what I have done is I've contracted some musicians to play or come out with a heroic song, put them together, and we're going to launch it like We Are the World. All musicians, all types, Christians, R&B, whatever, they all come together and sing to conscientize Ghanaians that every morning, all radio stations should play these patriotic songs to get everybody on board. If you segregate people and attack a group of people, you will fail, because the problem is it cuts across everywhere. So we need, like a champion's time, when he introduced the Wala to Alasa and Operation Feed Yourself, all those things. And it worked. Nifen, Nifa, Nanyan, all those things. So we need to conscientize Ghanaians that if you love your country, you will not go and steal. If you love your country, whatever you are doing, value for money. This is beginning of checking corruption.
Ken Ajepon is a popular Ghanaian parliamentarian and a prominent businessman. He spoke with me from New Jersey here in the U.S. Refugees International has released a report of the latest development on farming in the Horn of Africa region entitled We Were Warned on Lurid Lenses of Farming in the Horn of Africa. It affirms that low rainfall and drought are contributing to the food emergency affecting about 40 million people in the region. It also says conflict and a weak response from international humanitarian organizations have made the situation worse. Lessons from previous famines appear to have been ignored, according to the findings. For more on the report and recommendations outlined to help combat the situation, I reach the author of the study, Abdullahi Halaki.
The gist of the report is that in 2011, the humanitarian groups, the donors and the national governments did not do a good job. And as a result, in Somalia alone, 246,000 people died, half of them children under the age of five. So after the postmortem of what went wrong was done, it was realized that there are a few things that could be done. And some of those things were done in 2018, and this year is really around the issue of early response. Don't wait until the situation is so dire and then come and try and respond. This is to the humanitarian organizations and the donor groups.
Talking about unlearned lessons, so some of these donor organizations and humanitarian organizations were aware of the situation leading up to it, because I understand groups like Refugees International warned about certain steps that needed to be taken in order to prevent some of these occurrences. What happened?
I think that lesson wasn't heeded completely. There are explanations that could be offered. One, for instance, countries in that region are largely net importers of food. In Somalia, they get almost 90% of their grain from Ukraine and Russia. Once the conflict started there, then that became very challenging. For the European countries that have not stepped up to the plate, on the American side, they have done more, and you know, some more could be done. But for the European countries, the focus immediately in terms of resources, political will, and diplomatic attention shifted from what was going on in the Horn into what is going on in Europe. And as a result, a lot of time is wasted, and what will happen is that in the next few weeks, the famine will be declared in South Central Somalia, and if urgent steps are not taken now, we'll be able to see more deaths than we've witnessed in 2011.
What is the current situation in the Horn of Africa when it comes to this famine?
The situation is dire. There's no way of putting it. I can be I try to minimize its impact. But when you have people close to 40 million in the three countries in need of humanitarian aid, you know, in Somalia, it's almost 20 million people in need of humanitarian aid. That is a serious problem. The other thing that really struck me when I went there is the fact that most of these countries, in fact, all the three countries, especially Somalia, are at the front line of the sharp end of the impact of climate change. But Somalia doesn't nearly contribute even 1% of emissions. But there is a fund, the Clean Green Climate Fund, which is a lot of money, billions, almost 40 billion, I think. But Somalia can't access that fund despite A, being at the sharp end of climate impact of climate change, B, despite not contributing to the emissions, Somalia cannot get that funding. So what we are seeing is a combination of climate change as well as conflict that is making the situation difficult here.
Looking forward, what three major things do you think can be done at the moment to save thousands of lives that are at risk?
Three things. Number one, the regional countries, that is the IGAD countries, Intergovernmental Authority on Development, that is, should call an extraordinary summit of head of state to bring political and diplomatic attention to this particular problem, because primarily saving people's lives and livelihood is the primary function of those governments. People shouldn't be dying in 2022 because of lack of food, because there is enough food. It's a question of how that food will be brought to those people. The European countries need to step up to the plate. If they can do it for Ukraine, so therefore it can be done for the Horn of Africa, where the requirement is less than 4 billion, just like 4 billion, right? The final one is for the United States government to really move towards a general licensing that makes it easier for humanitarian groups to program in Al-Shabaab control areas. These are the three key top issues that needs to be done.
Abdullahi Halaki is a senior advocate for East and Southern Africa at Refugees International. He spoke with me from here in Washington. A peace deal to end Ethiopia's two-year civil war with Tigrayan forces was struck in November, but whether it will be honored remains to be seen. There's a desperate need for aid across much of Tigray, and both sides, victims of possible war crimes, are calling for justice. For VOA, Henry Wilkins has this report from Ethiopia.
2020's Axum massacre saw Eritrean and Ethiopian troops carry out extrajudicial executions against civilians, indiscriminate shelling and widespread looting in the city in northern Tigray. Residents estimate hundreds were killed. Hiab Gebretsadik is a survivor.
The federal government is actually the perpetrator of the crime, and the criminals cannot investigate their own crime. Justice should come from free international organizations like the UN, the EU, the African Union.
Like many in Ethiopia, he wants an accounting for the suffering that he said he and his community endured during the country's two-year conflict. A peace deal was signed in South Africa in early November, and an end to the war may be in sight, but grievances stemming from possible war crimes remain. In September, a UN commission of inquiry on Ethiopia said starvation of civilians in Tigray was used by the government as a method of warfare, and that Ethiopian and Eritrean forces used sexual slavery against Tigrayan women and girls. Tigrayan forces, the UN said, didn't use such tactics, but were accused of war crimes, including rape in areas they occupied in the Amhara and Afar regions. This woman from Lalibela, who asked to remain anonymous out of fear, says she was 7 months pregnant when Tigrayan soldiers came to her house and raped her. She says the soldiers took her to a deserted area and raped her. They held her there for 6 days, from Monday to Saturday. She added that the local administration had already left the town. There were no police. Everyone left. It is only those of us who are helpless and weak, she says, adding that she was pregnant and her mother is blind. Although both sides have committed atrocities, the group Human Rights Watch, HRW, says it has documented a sustained campaign of ethnic cleansing against Tigrayans, much of which has taken place in darkness because media and human rights investigators cannot gain access to the Tigray region. Letitia Bader is the Horn of Africa director for Human Rights Watch. She says that since the peace deal, the amount of aid being allowed to enter Tigray
is not enough to meet the enormous needs there. And at the same time, the services, be it communications, electricity, banking, which are so critical to meeting the needs of the population as well, have not been restored by the federal government authorities. So we really are talking about a context in which abuses are ongoing.
Asked whether the peace deal is being implemented fast enough, one analyst, William Davison of the International Crisis Group, told VOA there are challenges in seeing it through.
It's not entirely clear how much progress has been made in sort of deconflicting the front lines, this disengagement process. Again, this doesn't mean that the deal is about to collapse. It just demonstrates how hard this process is.
Tigrayan leaders have repeatedly said they wish to hold a referendum to leave the Ethiopian Federation. Henry Wilkins for VOA News.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from our African collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We begin the sport in Qatar, where Morocco made history as the Atlas Lions became the first African nation to reach a World Cup semi-finals. Cameroon, Senegal, and Ghana all reached the quarterfinals but got no further. Atlas Lions of Morocco striker Youssouf En-Nesyri scored a winning goal in the first half, leaping highest to beat goalkeeper Diego Costa to the ball and heading in to spark pandemonium at the El Tumama Stadium. This was how Moroccan fans at the stadium reacted to the victory over Portugal.
I can't describe this event. It's indescribable. Ecstatic. We've been yearning for this for so long, and I can't believe that I'm living this moment right here. We're gonna do it. Let's go, Morocco!
I'm feeling so well. This is fantastic. I'm so happy. And before this World Cup, I was thinking that Morocco will make it and we will win this cup. We're so proud to be Moroccan and in this beautiful country. We love Qatar, we love Morocco, and the World Cup's gonna stay here with Morocco.
In the last of the four quarterfinal matches played on Saturday, France defeated England 2-1 after a nail-biting match to set up a crunch semi-final match with Morocco for a place in the final. South American side Argentina already qualified for the semi-final and will be up against Croatia on Tuesday, December 13th. Rwanda President Paul Kagame has said that football governing body FIFA was right to select Qatar as the host of football's biggest spectacle. President Kagame was speaking during the International Anti-Corruption Excellence Awards held in Doha. President Kagame said that the underlining point of the criticisms of Qatar hosting the World Cup has no basis, as the 2022 host of the World Cup has shown much success so far.
FIFA was right to select Qatar to host this tournament, and the results on the ground make that fundamentally clear. The relentless onslaught of negative propaganda to which Qatar has been subjected by some countries needs to be called out.
In basketball news, an inspired second-half performance by Angola's Interclub saw them claim a 72-57 win over Costa do Sol in Group A of the FIBA Africa Women's Championship Cup being held in Mozambique. A game high of 17 points by center Christiana Matigwe and 13 points from Alexis Tolfiri led the Angolans to victory. In other matches played on Saturday, Alexandra Sporting Club had little trouble beating ASC Ville de Dakar 66-50 points in a Group B battle, while CNSS beat Energy BBC 77-54 points. Three matches are scheduled to be played on Sunday. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. This Thursday, President Biden of the United States will host 49 African heads of state and government and their representatives at a summit in Washington, D.C. The 49 African states that have been invited are those that have not been sanctioned by the African Union. According to reports, it is the intention of the United States at the summit to reset or reevaluate its engagements with the African continent. There are other reports that also state that the United States will expand its relationship with the continent in order to provide alternatives to those being produced by Russia and China on the African continent, that is peaceful competition with those two powers. It is also encouraging that there are reports that African states are about to reach a consensus that at the summit meeting in Washington, they would press for a transition from the usual aid and development to one emphasizing investment, foreign and domestic, and the promotion of trade. These are noble objectives. But African states must also undertake measures, for example, to promote foreign investment both domestically and abroad. The first thing is to tackle the issue of conflicts in the continent. In peaceful situation, foreign investment is easy to obtain, not where there are constant instability. Secondly, the African states, in partnership with others, must tackle the woeful power and energy deficit in the African continent. Where these things are not available, it is difficult to attain. Africans also must see what they could do in partnership with others to deal with real problems with the current infrastructure in the African continent, roads, bridges, ports. Unless these things are modernized, it will not be in the interest of promising investments to come to the continent. It is also necessary to start considering building an industrial base in the continent. The bottom line, however, for the summit is that they should try to convince the United States, as they may do later with other European powers, that it's better to move from the donor concept to one of partnership. And as far as the U.S. is concerned, hopefully it might renew its engagement and work with African states to ensure peace and stability in the African continent, and also ensure that the African people become happy people in the continent. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
This is another Tolio for my one. Make a tell you waiting up for a bullet. Body's big party inside my bullet. I went there with my best friend Kule. Kule they there with his girlfriend Shile. Ghetto girls them they like Takasufi. So many pretty girls they inside my mule. I just the one that say we can party, yeah. Everything yamba, everything there. Ah, oh shit. I get many girls with them they come from away. AJ boys them they like to throw away. Oh my Sigobe. We just having fun. We won't carry on. Crazy guests like make the stallion. But my girlfriend they yeah they turn me on. That's why I hold on tight. Hold on, yeah, yeah. Hold on tight. Hold on, yeah, yeah. That's why I hold on tight. Hold on, yeah, yeah. Hold on tight. Hold on, yeah, yeah. Take one photo before the baba them tell us to go. Ah, oh shit. I get many girls with them, they come from away. AJ boys, then they like to throw away. I'm a Sigobe. We just having fun. We won't carry on.
Design when we combine, we're to achieve a fine. Mobile Google good designing. Nyambale, nidire, ba striking. The fire, fire, you are lighting. My body blazing. I had a man take fire. And when you're coming home, Ngurida yoka kondo. Ova ngurire kuka wowo. Baby, korere nyo. Boy, I'm the one. I'm a bit boy, you're the one. Nazari waku kwa galati. And you got on taking a moment. I was born to love you and take a common sala. That's all you want to go and take a common sala. I was born to love you and take a common sala. Oh, baby, push me to the corner, take it slow. I want to take it down to the floor. Push me to the corner, take it slow. I wanna take you down to the floor. My body, you design when we combine. Motion to achieve a fine. Movie, the book of good designing. Number, needed, but striking. That's how you walk a galaxy. That's how you walk a galaxy. I'm a sponge. That's how you walk a galaxy.
Tuaribia siachani na wewe. Penzi letu linazuia nini? Kwa nini wasifanye ya kwao? Wasije kupa kuparamia tunavunja vikao.
Mami, wangalangara karubi. Weusi mangalasi waoni. Umenitosha moyoni. Yani, mtoto mungalaka baby. Unafusangara kwa baby. Kajitenga chumbani.
Zidisha sifa ndo kwanza krema picha bae shanza kuma vichwa
hatupa gani no hatupa gani no
mama
hatupa gani no
mama
hatupa gani no
mama
hatupa gani no hatupa gani no
mama
hatupa gani no hatupa gani no hatupa gani no hatubwa gani no
hata wakunjeza ondita sindo tunazidisha sifa ndo kwanza tulale janza picha mapema shanza kuumwa vichwa hata wakunjeza ondita sindo tunazidisha zinazidisha sifa. Ndo kwanza tela lejaza picha, mapema shanza kurumwa vichwa.
Yani, mtoto mungara ka baby, unafosangara kwa baby, kajitenga chumbani.
Hata wakunjeza ondita, sindo tunazidisha sifa. Ndo kwanza trela picha, bado shanza kurumwa vichwa.
Yale, turn back wheel.
Our Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Tracy Carter, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the death that will kill a man begins as an appetite. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.